This is a download from the BBC. For full terms and conditions, visit bbc.co.uk/radio3.
Elizabeth Bowen once said that she only truly felt at home halfway across the Irish Sea, between Britain and Ireland. Words that summed up her hybrid identity as an Anglo-Irish aristocrat. She moved between the two cultures throughout her life, never fully at home in either. This tension drove her cutting writer's eye as an outsider, an interloper, an Irish Protestant from a Catholic heartland, a woman in a male writing world. Bowen came of age during the First World War and its aftermath, as the violence of the trenches spread back into the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland as it then was. The First World War took the lives of many Anglo-Irish young men, leaving her community reeling. It also destroyed the world she came from. In the wake of the failed Easter 1916 wartime uprising against British rule in Ireland, Republican nationalists took up the uprising's cause in a guerrilla war against British rule in Ireland from 1919 to 1922. This was the First World War's bloody segue into the UK home front. Many weapons and combatants on both sides were veterans of France and Flanders. But war in Ireland was one Britain lost. In 1922, 26 counties of Ireland seceded from the UK, becoming independent, a final epilogue to the Great War. It is this story that Bowen chronicles in her great novel, The Last September, an elegy for the death of the Anglo-Irish class for whom the First World War and the violence it triggered in Ireland marked the end. This novel is the voice of history's losers. For the Anglo-Irish were caught in the headlights of Irish nationalism. Between 1919 and 1922, their houses were attacked, their families ostracised and spied upon. Their future was in full disintegration. Part of the brilliance of The Last September is its focus on one stately home, one family and their friends who simply have not realised this yet. The reader knows their culture is dying. They, in denial, sleepwalk towards its close, clinging to the details of cultural convention, niceties of dress, politeness, gardening. All the while, bubbling under the surface is the political rage of the struggle for an independent Irish state. It's what is not talked about that drives the novel, the house burnings, the guerrilla shootings of soldiers, the reprisals on civilians. Bowen was fascinated by life with the lid on and what happens when the lid comes off. The difficult currents beneath the facade of ordinary people. No culture lived such self-repression, this stiff upper lipness, more than her own. When faced with existential threat, it discussed tennis. Bowen knew this world well. Her one true tie was to her family's stately home in County Cork, Bowen's Court, loosely fictionalised in the novel as Danielstown House. Bowen is buried in the local graveyard there. Born in Dublin, Bowen spent much of her childhood in hotels in England and with her aunt's family in Clondalkin, as well as at Bowen's Court. Her adult years were spent between Cork and London. Occupying a liminal space, a shuttled self between England and Ireland, Bowen felt the new separation between the two particularly keenly. The Last September, published in 1929, just after the historic period it fictionalises, is the one book Bowen wrote that addresses the difficult, raw issue of her hybrid national identity. Bowen dares to write the pain that happens when historic ties between two neighbour cultures are cut, and cut in violence and hatred. In the novel, house parties continue against a backdrop of assassinations and guerrilla warfare beyond the estate gates. The Irish ascendancy feel growing fear as guerrilla violence against British rule encroaches ever closer until it claims the life of the heroine Lois's romantic interest, the young British Army officer Gerald. The killing of Gerald was fiction, but Bowen had no shortage of real incidents to draw upon. Her home county, Cork, was the location of some of the most murderous violence of the Irish War of Independence and the Civil War that followed. Cork was the site of the Kilmichael ambush, when an IRA flying column led by Tom Barry, a former First World War soldier in the British Army, ambushed and killed 18 British soldiers in 1920. British paramilitaries, the Black and Tans, sent in to ruthlessly suppress the Irish insurrection, burned Cork City's business district during a reprisals rampage. Known for drunken disorderliness, the Black and Tans were notorious for beatings and arbitrary shootings of Irish civilians. Purported sectarian violence also occurred. For instance, in 1922, the small County Cork village of Dunmanway saw the mass murder of 10 Protestant men. Against this dramatic backdrop, Bowen's The Last September is a powerful novel about the coming of age of a young girl, Lois Farquhar, from an Anglo-Irish background during this turbulent period. Lois is a niece of the Naylor family who owned Danielstown, just as Bowen herself was raised by her aunts. In some ways, Lois is Bowen herself, seeking a place in vain. "I was the child of the house from which Danielstown derives," Bowen wrote. Constructing a new independent identity for a state in its infancy required exclusion of the trappings of the old order, Bowen and her ilk. It was necessary, perhaps, but it was nonetheless as destructive as it was creative. Bowen's genius is to capture objectively this creativity of destruction which infuses The Last September. Lois symbolises something new seeking to emerge, a girl unsure of who or what she will become, an ascendancy mirror for the traditional nationalist portrayal of Ireland as a girl figure, Kathleen Ní Chulainn. In 1929, it was still unclear what future role a figure like Lois might have in Ireland. This ambiguity runs through her portrayal. In the 1990s, when I first encountered the novel at university in Dublin, I devoured it as a rare representation of an Irish Protestant female voice that dared to write of Ireland's wars. Now living in London, I can also trace Bowen's exile in the writing. An Irish writer in England, nostalgically recreating her lost family and lost world of her youth. Hers was no ordinary Irish exile, driven by poverty and unemployment to the streets of London. But for all that, it was no less filled with a sense of homesickness. A yearning for home underpins The Last September. But Bowen could never fit fully back in Ireland. In the new independent Irish Free State, Anglophobia was de rigueur. Irishness was narrowed down to identity criteria that were far more restricted than they had been before independence. Catholic, Gaelic, rural. All that was British, monarchism, the old class system, Anglicanism, was now treacherous. The new national anthem spoke of freeing Ireland from the foreigner. Bowen, who had belonged everywhere and nowhere from the very start of her life, represented a cosmopolitanism of the kind Ireland post-independence began rejecting. In later life, as a successful writer in England, Bowen drew a series of famous figures to Cork. She loved parties, and Bowen's court hosted many of the most gifted writers of the day. Yet here too, life overlaps with Bowen's fiction, for even at her most social, she retained the writer's outsider eye. We have all been to bad parties, the kind you regret turning up to, the kind that drag on but would be impolite to leave, the kind where no one is truly at ease. The Last September is as much about this universal experience as it is about any other. The friends of the family, the Montmorencies and Marda Norton, who come as house guests who have to be enjoyed and endured in equal measure. It may be war, but the characters still dress for dinner. Bowen has captured Anglo-Irish denial brilliantly. Many sources from the British side at the time lament what they see as their spinelessness, as the Anglo-Irish often politically sat on the fence and rarely declared open support for empire, king and union. But this is unfair. Southern unionists realised they had little option but timidity. Few in number and scattered across rural areas, they were incredibly vulnerable to attack. As The Last September depicts, the Anglo-Irish could offer tea and cake to the British army, but little else. They knew the British would eventually leave them to manage alone as best they could when they withdrew. Even this socialising in the novel ultimately brings the wrath of the IRA upon Danielstown. Bowen's home, Bowen's Court, survived the War of Independence. The fictional house, Danielstown, does not. Its burnings portrayed in majestic terms at the conclusion of the book. Fire brings clarity and the end of denial for the book's Anglo-Irish characters. Fire, it seems for Bowen, is not only the end, but also purifying. She can understand the raising of the landscape of the foreign, which the Irish rebels espoused. Other writers, such as Lennox Robinson in his play The Big House of 1926, end their work similarly, but Bowen's achievement is to do so without pathos. In real life, Bowen felt fiercely protective of Bowen's Court. It was not an especially beautiful architectural accomplishment. It was a square and blunt block of a house. But it had the grandeur of age, history, and size, which would in other countries have granted it protection. In 1960, Bowen, ageing, childless and widowed, finally had to sell. The local farmer who bought Bowen's Court promptly knocked the house down. Only grassland and some stones remain. It was symbolic of the broader fate of the Anglo-Irish cultural world Bowen depicted in the last September. Some Anglo-Irish rapidly adapted, assimilating to the new order. Some tried, often in vain, to convince a sceptical new era that they were Irish, that their families had been in the country for 400 years or more. Others left for exile, or adopted a form of internal exile within Ireland, hiding away, living quiet, discreet lives, staying out of politics, and keeping the head down, as the expression went. Reeling from their demographic losses as the officer class in the First World War, the violence in Ireland left their community in shock and hemorrhaging numbers. Over time, they dropped God Save the King for the new anthem at their garden parties and horse shows, intermarried and faded away. Bowen's caste were not loved in Southern Ireland during her lifetime. They were portrayed as the oppressor, which centuries before and during the more recent famine, some had most definitely been. They were the subject of resentment, dislike, violence on the part of the Irish public, but also secret fascination for their eccentric upper-class ways. The Last September captures this brilliantly, and above all without bitterness. When so many Anglo-Irish stately homes were burned to the ground in the War of Independence and Civil War, it was a cull of history unprecedented in these islands since the English Civil War. Today there is some regret. Might these sites not have been useful for cultural events, museums, in today's more wealthy, peaceful Irish Republic? Might not cosmopolitanism have enriched Ireland? Living now myself on the cusp of the Irish Sea, often in a plane in transition above its waves, these questions seem more immediate, more painful than they once did. But birth is always difficult, a process of expulsion, and a newly freed state, insecure, always fears the remnants of the old order, the enemy within. It was Bowen's gift to both understand and interpret this process into great art.